And in a completely different mood, leaders of the world's most industrialized nations started their first day of joint talks today, Thursday, in Germany. One of the main issues to be discussed, and hopefully upon which to reach a binding agreement, is climate change. The host, Chancellor Angela Merkel, is pushing for an accord and favors mandatory cuts on carbon dioxide emissions. But the US President George W. Bush appears to be holding his ground against them. Merkel is pushing for specific targets on reducing the carbon emissions believed to cause global warming, including a 2-degree target under which global temperatures would be allowed to increase by no more than 2 degrees Celsius. But Bush will not sign. He has proposed that the United States and other nations that produce the most greenhouse gases meet and by next year set a long-term strategy for reducing emissions. He believes each country should set its own goals on improving energy security, reducing air pollution, and cutting greenhouse gases in the next 10 to 20 years. This means a global accord is highly unlikely. I spoke to someone who has made protecting the environment a priority in her life and in her work. Actually, in the past 2 years, she has become quite a well-known personality as she happens to work in the field of communications. I asked her to introduce herself.
My name's Mary Colwell. I'm a parishioner at Clifton Cathedral in Bristol. I'm also a television and radio producer with the BBC in the Natural History Unit. And I've been working with the Catholic Church and the environment for about 2 years now.
From having had a look at the website at Clifton Diocese and looked for you on the internet as well, actually, I understand that concern for the state of the natural world has become more and more of a priority in your work. Why is that, Mary?
I just think that time really does seem to be running out, that there are so many huge problems, not just climate change, but the extinction of species and the destruction of habitats and pollution in the oceans. And all these different problems are all adding up to quite a serious picture. And I think that we really do have to start getting our house in order. We really do have to start facing up to the fact that we have to do something about it. And the world of the politicians and NGOs are certainly doing their bit as much as they can within their own constraints. But for me, it's much, much more of a matter of hearts and minds and of a really different change in attitude to the natural world, which is why I think religion is so important.
That's something I definitely want to come back to. But right now, you know, the G8 summit is kicking off in Germany and climate change and the environment is one of the main issues politicians, powerful politicians, are going to be speaking about and hopefully making agreements. News has been trickling out that the US is not going to accept the framework that has been set up. How important is it that politicians do get their act together?
Well, I mean, it's obviously vital they get their act together, and they are working under a set of very big constraints, really, because politicians have to rely on being voted in again. But they also know that there's a long-term picture that everybody has to work towards, too. So they've got to balance their own national interests, their own interests of people needing jobs and income and their own economic growth, against this much more seriously long-term issue, which the Stern Report pointed out is going to cost the Earth billions and billions and billions of dollars if we don't do something soon, much more expensive to do it later than now. So in a way, politicians have a very difficult juggling act to do. And to be honest, I don't think it's a lack of concern about the natural world. It's a lack of how to balance it all that's the main problem.
Now, Mary, you were saying that as Catholics, and the Catholic Church, in fact, has a voice and has power to have an impact on the way people think, because it's a moral issue as well, isn't it?
Oh, it certainly is a moral issue. And when we're talking about the survival of many millions of people and the survival of many, many millions of species, that's certainly a big moral issue. And it's a moral issue too because we're going to be handing on to the next generation something that's very damaged and difficult to live with. I mean, there is no doubt it's a moral issue. And I think the Catholic Church does have power, but it just as much has a voice of leadership. And that's the one thing that's missing sorely at the moment. There is no vision for the future. There's no one standing up there saying, this is our vision for the future, this is our vision of a just world, just for people, just for creation. And I think the Catholic Church has a vital role as a leadership role in this whole business.
It also works at a local level, which is important.
It works at every level. It works at the level of the coalface, if you like, of people on the ground trying to make a living, trying to just live their daily lives, trying to know what's the right thing to do, what's the morally right thing to do. It works on the level of parishes and dioceses. It works at the level of nations. It works on an international level. And because the Catholic Church has one single powerful and internationally recognized figurehead, the Pope, that puts it in a unique position in the world. There is absolutely nobody else like that in the world. And I think that puts a special onus on the Pope to take this overarching view, this big international view, as well as to help ideas on the ethics and the morality behind our treatment of the environment to trickle down, if you like, a trickle-down effect to us ordinary people working on the ground.
You speak about us ordinary people. You yourself are working on two fronts, I seem to understand. You work in your parish and you work at the BBC, which
yes.
is also a powerful medium for raising awareness. What is it that you do?
I make documentaries for radio and for television on natural history, so on wildlife. So what I try to do as much as possible is to bring in this other element, so not just look at pictures of animals, but bring in an element of understanding about what those animals are, what our relationship is to them, and how we've got to learn to live together. And I can do that in more successfully than others in certain programs, but it's always there as an undercurrent in the way that I think. And it doesn't have to be on the level of banging home obvious messages. It can just be on the level of much more emotional engagement, a much more respectful engagement with the natural world. And you can do that in many different ways. So I try to bring it into my work as much as possible.
What kind of response do you get?
I get an absolutely overwhelming response. When I give my talks and I show clips from the Natural History Unit, I show pictures of beautiful animals and beautiful places, and I talk as well about the problems, and I talk about what can be done, what the positive things that we can all do, not just in terms of changing light bulbs, but in our attitude, I get an overwhelmingly positive response. The combination of those things seems to really fire people, touch people in a different way. And I think that's the power of bringing together these two separate worlds, the world of the natural history world, of beautiful filmmaking and documentary making, with this religious world, which appeals to people on a completely different level, still a very important level. Put them together and you do have dynamite, I think. And I think that's where I'm trying to be most effective.
Mary, would you like to tell our listeners how they can change their attitude?
I think we have to undergo a complete shift from looking at the natural world as A, just something pretty, and B, as something useful to us. And we have to switch from that to looking at it as something that reflects the glory of God, something that is absolutely sacred in itself. And by sacred, I don't mean we can't touch it. Sacred, and I mean that if we do touch it, if we do use it for our own needs, that we do that which is full of respect and full of gratitude for what we've got. At the moment, the world just has these two almost schizophrenic, it's almost schizophrenic, our attitude to the natural world. It's pretty and it's useful. And I think we've got to kind of move that aside and look on it as sacred and something that we should treasure and something we should be thankful for the good things it gives us. And that's a very different mindset.
Mary, finally, is there any hope you have as regards to the outcome of this G8 summit?
I think if the leaders of the G8 can find that leadership potential that they have, I mean, the world will change if the G8 changes. The world will follow if these people make a strong stand and give everybody a vision that they can work towards. And at the moment, I can't see that vision. Everybody's talking, it's all confused, it's all in a mire out there. If what comes out of the G8 is something strong and visionary and full of hope for the future, it may mean hard decisions, but if we can see that what we're heading towards is a good future, I think people will be behind it. But it's going to require real bravery and real courage on the side of the richest nations.
Real bravery and real courage on the side of the richest nations. Isn't that what we all expect from our political representatives? In an ideal world, you'd most probably reply, but yes, that's exactly what we would want. It's what I would want, that's for sure. Even although it will mean making a few sacrifices, using less energy and not always choosing the easiest way. But the more programs I do on climate change, the more people I speak to about it, the more I am convinced that action must be taken now if we want to save the beauty, the diversity, and the richness of the universe, God's creation.